I'm Chris Voss here at WCRB with violinist Anna Williams from the Boston-based Neve Trio to talk about their newest release, Her Voice, piano trios by Louise Farranque, Amy Beach, and Rebecca Clark. Thank you so much for coming by and chatting with me again about this new music.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I gotta say, I love piano trios. I got hooked on them in college, and I've just always had a real affinity for them, and it was such a great opportunity to learn some new piano trios. And what do you think it is about a piano trio, that combination of instruments that's so compelling and dramatic even?
Well, I mean, I'm with you. Preaching to the choir. I love the medium so much. I think that, you know, it can be so many different, almost different ensembles in one, because you have the piano, which is like its own world. The right hand, the left hand, the inner voices, the range. It can be a soloist. It can be sort of like the orchestra. It can provide the atmosphere. It can do it all, you know? And then you have the stringed instruments and their interplay. And obviously they can have soloistic moments as well. But you basically have the capacities of everything from an intimate chamber ensemble to essentially an orchestra. So I think it gives a lot. Well, you only have three people, but they're doing a lot of different roles.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's the worlds that you can explore in a piano trio are incredible. And there's some really cool sound worlds that are explored in these three women's music. And why go with Rebecca Clark and Amy Beach and Louise Farranque? Why these three women in particular?
Well, I mean, gosh, they were such trailblazers. They opened the door for future generations, I think, more than we even kind of give them credit for in a lot of ways.
How so?
Well, I mean, they each in their individual lives really were, for lack of a better term, breaking glass ceilings. So, for instance, Louise Farranque, she was, I believe, the first woman tenured professor at the Paris Conservatory. And she, by the way... some problems are timeless because she, during her tenure, she fought and achieved equal pay. She's pretty cool. So that plus her writing, I think at the time, Schumann, he was like an admirer of hers, which is kind of wild to think about that, you know, he's who we sort of think of as one of the big titans, like the big five or whatever. And he was a fan of hers, you know? So she has an example of someone who did her thing, definitely had sort of the cards stacked against her, and her art, it really speaks for itself. And it deserved to be heard, you know? I think that there's been just historically a lot of amazing work put forth by people of different genders and races, honestly. And so anytime that we can help to bring them to light, when it's wonderful music is wonderful music. And so anytime that we can help bring that to light, especially from people who have not necessarily been given the opportunity in the past, it's like a no-brainer.
Did you, as a trio, know this music before? I mean, is within the piano trio rep, are some of these trios like the Farranque or the Amy Beach or the Clark, are they known or are they also rare within those groups?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the Clark is probably the most known in a lot of ways. I think we all came into it with that as like, ooh, we get to play the Clark. This is so exciting. The Beach was probably next on the list. It was in terms of being familiar with it. And the Farranque was really, we couldn't even get the music. So it took a really long time. We had to order it special. And like, it took, I don't know, like 2 months just to get the score. Because there's trios, obviously, of hers that you can find. A lot of them have the flute, though. And so to find this version was a little scavenger hunt.
Wow, that's incredible. I had no idea. That's very, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, since you spoke so excitedly about the Rebecca Clark, let's start there.
Sure.
The as I mentioned at the top, the sound worlds of these three women are very, very different.
Right.
And also the amount of support that they had in their lives for music making is very different. I feel like Rebecca Clark is possibly of the three who had the least support, even though she was living the latest of the three.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel like that some of that tumult comes into her music making. I don't know if that's a reflection of of her, you know, situation and the lack of support she had in her life, yeah. or if it's also just the post-war, you know, writing in the 1920s, that kind of thing. But
right.
I don't know, maybe I've said too much, but let's talk a little bit about that sound world, because it's gnarly and cool and,
yeah.
And viney.
I like viney as a word. That's awesome. Yeah, it is. It's really, it starts with this huge da-na-na-na and this huge crash. And then it'll have moments where it's really kind of eerie and somber. But yeah, I definitely say huge range, huge dramatic range. And you're not the first person to bring up, like, you know, is it her personal life? Is it that she was dealing with a lot there in terms of her family? Is it that she maybe was feeling, you know, she was a woman who was not being given her due? She was the one who had her sort of big break when she entered the Coolidge competition, right? So that was this composition competition in the Berkshires, and she entered essentially anonymously and wound up, at least at first, she wound up tying with Ernst Bloch for her viola sonata. So that, you know, is sort of part of how she became, you know, known. So I don't know if that's part of your background, of not being able to, you know, get credit for your own work, at least for a long time. I think that that could certainly be part of her sort of angst.
Yeah.
Plus she had that family situation where she was kind of on her own. Who knows, you know, if it was that or the time she was living in, but certainly it's wild. Her trio has a lot, and it's really exciting.
Is that what draws you guys to playing it and trios to playing it? Is the difficulty of it in some sense?
I mean, I think you put it so well, like the sound worlds that she gets are so specific, you know? So there's like I mentioned, sorry for singing into the mic, but the da-na-na-na, it's very like, oh, bombastic and exciting. And then it'll go into like sort of watery, I think it's very visual in a lot of ways, you know, the scenes that she paints. In the second movement, she has this very specific color where she uses mutes in the strings, and it's for the whole movement. So it's this very specific, intense, yet very intimate sound. And the writing in that movement in particular is so kind of eerie and, I don't know, transportive. And then the last movement has like so many like jagged edges and whatnot. So I think it's just, you know, any, like we were saying before, good music is good music is good music. And this is great music where you can dig into so many different components of it.
The Amy Beach, I think, is interesting as well because it's a later piece than the Clark. But tonally speaking, it's more romantic writ large, right? It sort of harkens back a little bit. And I guess it was influenced by her songs?
Yeah.
She was 70 when she wrote it?
I mean, I don't know the specific songs. I would love to know. This should be my homework. I should go and research exactly which songs. But yeah, it's very kind of singable melodies, so charming not just charming, but you know, there's still a lot in there. But yeah, I think hers is a more singable kind of a world, while still having tons of different colors and characters.
And she has a Boston connection, which
yeah,
is
yeah, she does.
Yeah, she lived in Chelsea and was the first woman to have her symphony, a symphony performed by a major orchestra, BSO, back in 1896,
right.
I believe, 1896.
And didn't she also solo with them when she was like an itty bitty like teenager?
Yeah, apparently, just like that was what sort of like a Clara Schumann, for example. She was known for her piano playing,
yeah, yeah.
In large part, at least that's my understanding of it.
She's one of those.
She's one of those
ladies.
Yeah.
Ugh,
well, and it
so
makes
good.
Sense for writing piano trios yeah. too, because I was reading somewhere it gives you the breadth to explore and the composers to say look at my chops, look what I can do.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's I give her so much credit also that, you know, it's super pianistic in terms of like what you just said, you know, there's no denying that there's that aspect of her writing, but to me I don't hear it as this is a fantastic pianist who is also sort of like giving stuff to the strings. It's so fully realized. And it's an awesome piece, little gem.
And the Franck is in a completely different sound world and a much earlier sound world. I mean, it's incredible. It was written in the 1840s, and as you were saying, Schumann was a big fan of her music and so forth. Let's go a little bit into that. What was it like diving into this piece that you didn't have any knowledge about before, that you couldn't even get the music to?
Right. Oh my gosh. It was, you know, what's the term? Tabula rasa? I mean, because we just went into it being like, what is this? What's going to happen? And it was so cool. It was so neat. It was like, you know, discovering hidden, but kind of treasure. Definitely treasure, kind of hidden in front of your nose, in a sense. I mean, she has so many different colors and characters. You're right. It's more, if you were to compare it to, say, the Clark, it's more, quote, classical, but so elegant and charming and funny and, you know, not sort of staid, you know? And it was really exciting. Like, there's parts of it that were like, this is so goofy. Like, this is like circus music. Like, what is this? And I think bringing out those funny moments, it's kind of quirky, and bringing out those sides and not treating it like, well, this is a classical, so we have to be, you know, we have to get our powdered wigs out and whatnot, you know, because that's what we all do at rehearsal. Fun fact.
Yeah, my powdered wig is hanging over by my desk.
I didn't want to say, but it looks great.
Thank you. Thank you. But I think you're right. I mean, what I was remarking when I was listening to it, and it made me explore her life just a little bit more. I was like, I mean, this doesn't sound like a one-off composition, maybe like a Bernstein trio or something like that,
right?
Was written early in his career. This is like an incredible, like the maturity of the sound is staggering. And then, of course, well, she wrote more than 50 compositions. She wrote 3 symphonies. She has 2 trios.
Right.
I mean, she's got all this vocal music and stuff.
Right.
I mean, this is an incredible, incredible musician that we unfortunately don't know all that much about.
I know. Well, so hopefully more people can say, hey, Louise Franck, let's program her, because her stuff is great. And it really is. So on top of being a trailblazer, these are all, I was going to say just her, but all 3 of these are amazing examples of women who are awesome at their craft, and we deserve to hear more from.
I've been thinking about this. I think Madeleine Albright is perhaps the most famous person of voices in saying, like, in order for a woman to make it in a man's world, she has to be twice as good and have to work twice as hard as the man does to be taken seriously. Yeah. And I wonder if that effort comes through in this music at all to you. I don't know if that's a dumb question or not, but in the sense that, does it have that feeling of like, this is something that's incredibly refined that I need, that has that need to prove in it? Or is it just, you know, well written?
That's so interesting. I never would have thought of it that way. But I mean, I'm sure you're right, because the times they were living in were, you know, certainly so much harder for women artists to be seen and heard. Isn't it Beach who, I think she had to write under her husband's name? I mean, she's like Mrs. such and such. Like, she's not able to actually even have her own name in a way. So, I mean, I don't know. I hadn't thought of it that way. That's they probably were working at, you know, twice as hard and smarter. I don't know. All we do know is, like, these are great pieces, and for whatever reason, probably because they're women, it's been a lot harder until recently, where, you know, this new kind of shift is starting to happen, thank God, where we're becoming more aware of, like, the voices that we haven't given enough attention to historically. So, yeah, I just think their pieces are great. And you know, sometimes people will be like, oh, it's, you know, you're making too much of, like, the women composer thing. It's like, no, I would disagree with that. I think that, again, it's like trying to correct an imbalance that's been. And furthermore, good music is good music, and this is as good as it gets, and in my opinion.
Does it have an extra special place? You're a woman, Ari, as well, the pianist for Neve Trio. Does this I mean, does it feel good to put an album together like this?
100%. Yeah. And that it's so, sorry, it sounds like a broken record, but it's so good. You know, it's such great material. It's like digging into like the Clark, for example. You know, there's nothing there that anybody could speak to as being, oh, well, it's so feminine. Whatever that means, like that's a bad thing. It's not. But, you know, there's no kind of box that any of them specifically fit into. And I think that's right on, you know. And the reason I bring them up as being trailblazers is like, thankfully, we have more and more women writing amazing stuff today and in the future. And I think, you know, less and less are people confined by like, well, it has to sound feminine. You know, so it's very cool to be like, no, this has been going on, and meaning the incredible work, and if we can be a tiny part of shedding a little more light on that incredible work and helping other people to get equally excited about it, then I think, you know, that's something we're happy to do.
Who are women composers who are living today that you hope to maybe explore and whose names you want to like maybe get out there as well?
Oh my gosh. How long do we have? So I have so many dear friends, Leah Reed, Dale Trumbore, Lisa Hefter, Elena Ruehr. Obviously there's, you know, Jennifer Higdon, who, you know, huge fans. I should have brought like a directory of like all the incredible female composers, because there's so many. Montgomery. I mean, it's such an extensive list, but it's just exciting because, again, it's like everyone creates their own sound world. And for instance, we're doing an upcoming Longy concert where we're playing a piece by Leah Reed, who she uses a lot of electronics. And it's this sort of sound world that includes a lot of bird song and like rain. And it's just so cool. And so it's kind of incorporating newer, I mean, to someone like me who's like, oh, the electronics, this is very exciting. Newer sort of sound world and elements and including that in the vocabulary. And then, of course, you know, Jennifer Higdon is so well known and deservedly so. She's incredible. And we love playing her piano trio, the Color Through. We program that often as well. I mean, in other words, women are doing incredible things as per usual. So let's just pay more attention then. Please.
What do you think it takes to make these names, or names that are unknown that should be known, more household? Is it us on the radio? Is it concert programmers? What makes someone go to a concert, do you think, or how do you think you get somebody to go to a concert or buy an album where they don't recognize the names, where they already do know other names and are big fans of that, and make that decision to say, I'm going to explore something I don't know.
Right. That is the million-dollar question, right? I mean, I think it all helps. You know, I think if, you know, when you're programming stuff, whether it's, you know, on a radio program or podcast or concert program, whenever you can include those pieces that may not be as, you know, household name, I think that really does do a great service, because I don't think people are intentionally at this point not exploring new works or lesser known works from the past. I think it's more that it can be like a little intimidating. So, gosh, I mean, I don't know that I have a great answer to it other than as much as you're able to program it, as much as one is able to program it, the better off we'll all be, because our, you know, our ears will be more open and the excitement will start to be more and more and more. I mean, that's what we all want, a more diverse, rich sort of repertoire and concert going experience. So nothing wrong with the Schumann and the Beethoven and the Brahms, of course. Like, I mean, let's have a whole talk about that, you know, about how incredible they are. It's just that equally there are these amazing works that also deserve to be heard. So, yeah, I think it's maybe just emphasizing that it's all, I sound like a broken record, but it's all great material and it's all worth hearing. And it's exciting, I think, to discover something new. You know, so yeah, you love your Beethoven symphony, and as well you should. That's fantastic. Also, Luis Ferranc, you'll probably love it too. Just give it a chance.
The album Her Voice from Neve Trio is out now on Chandos Records, and features the first piano trio by Luis Ferranc, piano trio by Amy Beach, and piano trio by Rebecca Clark. Anna Williams, thank you so much for taking a moment and chatting with me.
Thanks, Chris.